You're listening to Birth Babies
and Busy Moms.
I'm Kia.
And I'm Dana.
We're two busy, sleep-deprived moms discussing different stages of motherhood,
providing personal experiences and guest speakers to empower and educate mothers around the world,
helping and supporting them to make informed decisions and to let you know
you're not alone. I know. And welcome to episode 2, part 1 of Kia's story. We're going to go over her pregnancy, birth, and postpartum experience.
Where do we begin? I had my son in 2021. With my pregnancy, I thought I had a great pregnancy until afterwards.
And why do you think it took so long to realize that?
So the first part of my pregnancy, I didn't have morning sickness. I didn't have any bad effects from pregnancy. Only thing that I had was acne, to the point where like people would pick up on it and ask me why my face looked like that.
And when did that start?
I think it started around like 8 weeks. Like it was bad, maybe even sooner actually, maybe like 6 weeks. And it was cystic acne, hormonal acne, and it scarred my face.
And what other complications did you have during this pregnancy?
I started getting a stomach ache, and I thought it was maybe just like the baby's growing, things are moving, everything's shifting, that kind of pain. And I didn't know that it was common to get UTIs.
And how did you find out it was a UTI?
I let it go for about 3 weeks because I thought, okay, maybe this is just normal feeling from pregnancy. So I didn't bring it up my first initial appointment with him. But then when I brought it up, he gave me antibiotics. I took the antibiotics and then I never got better. So within a week, the antibiotics were done. I went back to my family doctor and my family doctor was like, oh, well, we'll just give you another round of antibiotics. Because when they culture a urine test while you're on antibiotics, it will be negative regardless. They gave me like a stronger medication the second time, but then it still got worse.
And what do you mean by worse? What were your symptoms at the time?
So my stomach just really hurt. My back hurt kind of. I had flank pain and I felt unwell. Like I felt sick all the time. I started feeling like I was gonna throw up. There was just weird symptoms. It wasn't like it burns when I pee.
Right.
So then it wasn't until this has gone on for about 2 weeks that I actually went to labor and delivery. And they were like, okay, we're gonna keep you overnight just to observe this because why isn't your UTI getting better? But every single time they would send the urine culture off to see what my bacteria was resistant to, there was always an issue that they couldn't get the information they needed. And it's frustrating because I think I had over 20 urine cultures.
And what was the diagnosis?
So I had enterococcus and it was resistant to like every antibiotic. And I think that it's complicated because enterococcus shows up way differently than like typical bacteria like E. coli. And I have no idea how I got it. They have no idea how I got it. And they didn't know why I wasn't responding to medication. Because mind you, I was in and out for 4 months. I was on antibiotics IV for over 70 days. And wow. On top of that, I had oral antibiotics.
And did they say there could be side effects towards your fetus at the time? What was the prognosis on that?
They did tell me there were some side effects like a yeast infection, your GI bacteria, like those types of things, but they didn't really go into detail of this could affect your baby. And because of the infection, I ended up getting hydroureters, hydronephrosis, I had kidney stones, and I had infected kidney stones.
So what is the hydronephrosis? I've never heard of that before.
Okay, so hydronephrosis, I think, is when your kidneys swell up, and then hydroureters is when your ureters swell up. So the urine can't go through the typical system to get into the bladder to release. Like I would go anywhere from like 12 to 30 hours every time between peeing.
That sounds so painful.
Yeah, it was more painful than childbirth. Even when you pass a kidney stone, it's worse than giving birth. And I don't know if it's because after you give birth, you have like a baby. It's like a one-time thing. Whereas when I had kidney stones, I had multiple.
And how many kidney stones did you have during this pregnancy?
Oh, easily over 10. Yeah. And I had to be put on narcotics. That, I think, was kind of the start of like my trauma in pregnancy because first admission, the nurse told me that my baby could be addicted to opioids. It was only like 22 weeks at the time. So unless I was delivering, my baby wasn't going to be addicted to opioids by taking them one or two times. And my baby was in distress because of the pain I was in because I was unable to pee.
What did that distress look like? Were they hooking you up to machines to...
Yeah, so I got NSTs, like non-stress tests, daily. I think that the baby's heart rate was just really high. My heart rate was really high. They said, okay, let's just try this. We'll do one dose to see if this helps the pain, helps you to be able to pee to relieve the stress that's put on you and the baby. And at first I was like, no way. After hearing the nurse say that to me, I just had extreme anxiety. But my OB was really good. Like, I know people have bad experiences with their OB, but my OB specifically was very evidence-based and would put statistics in front of me, and he would go over the pros and cons. Like, I didn't really ever have appointments where I was just in for 5 minutes and out. And I don't know if it's because my case was so strange and so different. Like, even when I had my second, people remembered me because of how strange this first pregnancy was.
And I feel like that's how most OBs should be. They go over the pros and cons, they provide statistics and the evidence so you feel comfortable with the decision you're ultimately making.
Yeah. And I think it's hard too, though, because before you go into pregnancy, you don't know any of these things. And you kind of just, there's like this, not stigma, but like you take medication while you're pregnant. Oh, it's so bad. It's so bad. But there's like pros and cons, right? And I think that you should be at least aware of them and choose what you're doing. But mind you, though, I was in so much pain where I normally have low blood pressure. My blood pressure was always in the high because of how much pain I was in.
Yeah, it sounds very severe.
Yeah. On my third admission, they almost overdosed me.
Wow, how did that happen?
The nurse gave me 2 doses opposed to just giving me 1. And it was just hard because I didn't even really know what was going on. And this was when I was only allowed to have 2 visitors, which was my partner and my sister. But my aunt came because I was there for so long. I think they just felt bad for me, so they let more people come. My aunt was like, what's wrong with her? She can't talk. She doesn't even know who I am. And the nurse that morning was like, oh, there's something wrong. So they completely like cut me off narcotics. And then they brought in an anesthesiologist to my case.
Wow. And when they brought the anesthesiologist to your case, what kind of happened there?
So I was nervous to take them ever again because every single time that I would go home, they would give me pills, but I usually wouldn't take them because I had anxiety from the nurse telling me my baby would be addicted. And then the anesthesiologist was saying that they could give me like a slow release pill opposed to like giving me something all at once. Actually, when they gave me that slow release pill was when they gave me an MRI. I think the slow release pill wasn't more than I was getting in the IV, but it affects you differently. When I went back upstairs, I said, like, I'm not taking that medicine ever again.
And did you go for the MRI?
Yes. So they wanted to do a CT scan in the beginning, but I said absolutely not. They couldn't see very well with the ultrasounds. And mind you, I was getting them every day. They were going to do a cystoscopy while I was pregnant, but then they opted not to because it was so painful for them to even do a catheter. And they didn't want to put me to sleep. So they did the MRI, but the MRI didn't show much more other than that I had like a benign tumor.
And then going back to the antibiotic resistant bacteria you had, what did that look like? When did this end? You were hospitalized on and off for 4 months. What does this look like?
At first, they wanted to put a port in. Because I was on antibiotics IV for over 4 months, almost all my veins they couldn't use anymore. Every 3 days, they're putting in a new IV. And I said, absolutely not. You're not putting in a port. I'm not going through a surgery or a procedure I don't need. That's going to increase the risk of infection. The doctors on the ward were actually arguing with me. And then when I went home, I was on vancomycin. And even to this day, there's very limited research on it. But I swear, the reason my baby had C. difficile cell was because of the antibiotics.
So at 8 months, the bacteria was responding to the antibiotic. And then you gave birth when?
So I was 37 and one. So I got induced because my OB and I just kind of decided the pros and cons of waiting it out even more. I was in severe pain. I still couldn't pee properly at this point. And he said, okay, let's just induce you at 37 weeks. I had a positive GBS culture, so I had to get more antibiotics while I delivered. And they never had another positive enterococcus after that, but I had anxiety, I think, related to that.
Oh, of course. You went through a very traumatic experience. You had all these medical complications with your first.
Yeah, but it's kind of hard because they never would admit it. They never tell me, oh, this could be why. Like, I never even got a C. difficile diagnosis until my son was a year old.
And how did you get the diagnosis at that point? How did they miss it previously?
Everyone just kept telling me it's normal. And mind you, my son also had low blood sugar when he was born. You're kind of the one that's making me like dive deeper into this because you even said once before that you've never heard of a baby with low blood sugar, whereas the nurses on the floor made me think it was normal.
I'm not a doctor, but I've never heard anyone tell me about low blood sugar, a baby being born, especially a full term baby.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I never heard of it either, but I just thought it was normal because I don't know. I was told that.
Yeah. And I think it's so sad because even for my child, I remember being told everything was normal. The hematomas are normal. And I don't know why this is a catchphrase in the medical world right now, because for us, it doesn't feel like you're validating our emotions, our fears, our anxieties. It's just making things worse.
Yeah. And I think there just needs to be an answer. Just not, it's normal. Like if it is normal, okay, why is it normal? Like, I'm sure if somebody sat down and explained that it's normal because of X, Y, and Z, it would make more sense than just being told a blanket response of it's normal.
Exactly. And did you ask for more explanation?
I did, but I think because I had postpartum anxiety with my first, a lot of people just brushed it off as, oh, you're an anxious mom and these things are normal. And people tried to push me to bottle feed because breastfeeding was kind of difficult in the way that he would throw up all the time, like projectile vomiting, but later on was diagnosed with FPIES, an allergy to egg and milk. And everyone just kind of said, he's not sleeping because you guys co-sleep. Everybody would say he's not sleeping because he's breastfed. He's 3 years old. He's obviously not breastfed. And he doesn't sleep.
Yeah.
There's just so many aspects to it that I start wondering that if my postpartum journey was different, how would that look for my child? And also there's this correlation that they found in research that taking antibiotics affects your mood. You're more likely to have depression. You're more likely to have anxiety. And I'm sure things would have looked different if I actually did a more holistic approach and an overall approach than just from one area.
So after experiencing all of these issues throughout your pregnancy and then more issues after giving birth to your son and your son developing these issues as well, how did that affect your relationship with him?
So I was very attached to my son. I still am. I have that trauma bond to him. I never really let people watch him, hold him. My son's already had issues. I don't want any more. I don't sleep. I sleep 2 hours at a time. And I didn't lie about anything that I was doing. If I was having issues breastfeeding, if I was having issues bottle feeding, if I was having issues sleeping, I was telling people this and I was hearing their opinions on it, which was really hard on my mental health. And I think it was hard because a lot of people didn't understand that it's not that I didn't want them around, I just wanted to be with my baby.
Yeah, and I think too, after you give birth, you want to spend the time with your child, and the people that are coming to help, they're always focusing on the baby when the mother needs help. You know, there's dishes that need to be done, there's laundry that needs to be done, there's other things that people could be helping with.
Yeah, and I think it's just hard though, because I was a first-time mom, people just assume, oh, it's because she doesn't know better. People were offended by it, but it's like, no, I want to bond with my child. I don't want to just send my baby off with somebody else and sleep. I want to sleep with my baby in their bassinet in my room, right?
Mm-hmm. You want to be close to your baby.
Yeah, and like even to this day, he definitely has more of an attachment to me, I think, than the normal child per se. And I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing, but if I wasn't as mindful as I was around 18 to 20 months of being separate from him and like letting him explore more of the world and trust other people, then we probably would run into more issues.
Yeah, for sure. And it's great that you're mindful of those things.
Well, I wasn't in the beginning. And then I did a really gradual transition to daycare, but we found somebody that worked with me on how I wanted it to look. And she was super, super great with me. So that helped a lot. But my son never spent a night away from me until I was pregnant with my second.
Okay. And let's get into your pregnancy with your second. What did that look like? Was it a lot different from the things that happened with your first?
So my second was kind of a shit show. So when I was 2 weeks pregnant, I had a hemorrhagic cyst in my ovary and it was bleeding into my abdomen and I was in severe pain. And when I went to the ER, it was the evening, so they didn't have ultrasound and they gave me a CT and they said, well, we think your ovary is twisted, so if you want to have more kids, we need to untwist it because there's obviously that chance that you might not get pregnant. And I was like, what are you talking about? Why would I not get pregnant? I have another ovary. But she was saying that, I don't remember if it was the left or the right, but that ovary, you have a less chance of getting pregnant.
I've never heard of that before.
Neither have I until that moment. Me and my partner at the time wanted more children, but I'm thinking I only have one child. So I agreed and did the surgery, and it just turned out that I had a hemorrhagic bleeding cyst into my pelvis region. So a week later, I'm still in severe pain to the point where I cannot function, and I'm throwing up at this point. I go back, they give me another CT. They sent me to an early pregnancy clinic around 3.5 weeks because I had a positive test at home.
So wait a minute, did they go ahead with the surgery?
Yeah, Yeah, so I had an exploratory surgery, and that's when they found the cyst. Prior to the surgery, they didn't see it on the scans.
So did they go ahead with the CT?
Yeah, so when I was 2 weeks pregnant, I had a CT. When I was 3 weeks pregnant, I had a CT as well. The whole time I'm thinking, my baby's going to become deformed.
Well, of course. You hear all these horror stories of, you know, you can't go and do these MRIs or CTs while you're pregnant. And yes. Meanwhile, you've done two back to back within a week.
Yes, and I got really, really nervous because they didn't see a healthy pregnancy at 3.5 weeks. They said, we don't see a sac, we don't see a heartbeat, we don't see anything. So this is probably an ectopic pregnancy, or this is a pregnancy that isn't viable. I think it was 4.5 weeks. I was offered like a pill that like releases the pregnancy if that's what I wanted. And I was like, absolutely not. I want to have a baby. And they were saying to me, well, we don't think this is viable. We don't think this is a healthy pregnancy. I'm like optimistic. Like, well, how do you know? I'm going to wait it out.
Wow. So they were offering you this pill. And what was their evidence that you were having an ectopic pregnancy or it wasn't a viable pregnancy at the time?
Okay, this is where I find it strange. They were reading my blood work backwards, I'm pretty sure, because if you look on my end, every time I get my blood work done, it's going up. Even if it's going up 3 or 4 points, it's still going up. And they're telling me on their end, it's going down. I was told that I was having a miscarriage at 6.5 weeks. It was just a very stressful time.
That's so scary that these medical professionals are offering you a pill to expel and get rid of your pregnancy, saying it's not viable. Meanwhile, you ignore their medical advice because you're seeing numbers on your end. Thank goodness you looked into that. And what about the women who trust the doctors blindly? They trust them, and not even that they're looking at it blindly, but these medical professionals are trained. They went to school for all of this stuff. So of course we're going to trust them. They know better than us. That's what we like to think. But in reality, how many women actually accepted this pill and got rid of a viable pregnancy because they were told to do so?
I think that it's hard too, because I was in such a state of like fight and flight because I had this toddler at home. I had a horrible pregnancy with. I was nervous that what my second pregnancy would look like to begin with. I kept thinking, am I doing the right thing?
Well, you clearly did. Let's get into more of your pregnancy.
Yeah, so with her, I was lucky that my OB took me at 10 weeks. So I was at an early pregnancy clinic until I was 9 weeks. And then a week later, my OB from my first pregnancy seen me. With my second, I started having a lot of issues around 6 weeks. So I started having heart issues where I kept fainting, and I had hypermesis gravida. So I had to get IV fluids basically every 2 to 3 days at an urgent care. Once I started seeing my OB, they transitioned me from like the B6 pill or whatever that you took as well to Zofran. So that helped, but also I kept asking him, is my baby going to be deformed? And he kept saying, we can't see until we do the anatomy scan. Me being already anxious, that whole time until 18 weeks, my heart was just beating.
And so the Zofran, was it helping with the nausea? Was it also helping with your fainting spells?
No. So, okay, my fainting spells would happen, I think, until I was about 16 or 17 weeks. And I think that it was just happening from an electrolyte imbalance, but also I had like stuff coming up on my heart tests. They didn't really know why. Like my heart would be completely fine and then just jump to 250 for no reason at all.
But you know what? I've heard about that in pregnancy.
Yes. So basically the heart doctor says your heart's pumping for 2 now, and you're also under a lot of stress just by carrying a baby. I never even really followed up with it, to be honest. As soon as I got an okay, my heart's fine, I just stopped going.
And when was the okay for your heart?
I think it was around 16 or 17 weeks. And my OB knew that I didn't want narcotics this pregnancy. He knew that if I had to take antibiotics, it's not going to happen until I have that antibiotic resistant culture done.
Well, of course, you want to dig deeper into the issue rather than blindly taking all these antibiotics again.
Going to my hospital appointments, I was so nervous to use bathrooms, like go anywhere. And I thought I had everything in control. I thought I set everything up. I set boundaries with everybody. Like, I didn't really tell anybody what was going on with my pregnancy either. I was very private. Like, I didn't even post my pregnancy, I think, until I was about 20 weeks. Just because of all the complications, I didn't really know where this was going to take me.
Were you smaller the second time around?
So small. With my first, I gained 70 pounds, and with my second, I gained 30, but I lost 12 pounds the first 12 weeks.
If you're throwing up a lot, that makes total sense. You don't have the nutrition in your body.
But then when I was about 6 months, I want to say, maybe 7 months, I had a really bad bout of kidney stones. And I wasn't taking antibiotics until I was admitted to the hospital. And it's frustrating because I knew what was going on. And they're trying to tell me this, that, whatever. And my OB was on vacation. I ended up getting admitted and they kept doing catheters to release the urine because I wasn't able to pee. I had such bad anxiety. Even to this day, I am a germaphobe and I don't want to go through what I went through my first. I also had this big thing that I thought that once I got admitted to the hospital, I'm never going home.
And that's a scary thought.
Well, yeah, because I've never been apart from my toddler at this point. And also with my first, I literally didn't go home for 4 months. And anytime I did, I was getting readmitted.
And with a toddler at home, of course you don't want to be admitted to the hospital for 4 months. You're missing out on all these milestones. And still, like, they're so young, they still need you. You mentioned you have this trauma bond to your child. That's devastating, being away from your child for so long.
And when I was hospitalized was when he first started doing full days at daycare. So he would nap at daycare. And it was a really big transition of getting him into his own bed, putting him in daycare. He's now with his dad more. There's just so many different aspects of his life transitioning. I couldn't stop thinking about it. You'd think I'd have all this time to sleep. I couldn't sleep. I would sit there and watch the camera on my phone.
Yeah, and like I mentioned before, that makes sense, especially with this trauma bond. And yeah, like you mentioned too, is your son's going through all these transitions, but also you're going through all these transitions. You're about to have a new baby. There's just so much going on in your life at this point.
So the resident doctor at the time, after I was there for about 36 hours, I seen urology, I seen internal medicine. They're seeing that I haven't peed for over 30 hours. They don't know where the urine's going, but they're confirming to me, this isn't going to your heart. This isn't going to your lungs. You're not in kidney failure. So I said, if I'm not in all these things, why can't I go home? They're saying they just want to monitor to make sure this doesn't get worse. In my head, I'm thinking, well, it's going to get worse if I stay here. And the resident that was on my case was saying to me, you can't leave, when I asked to leave against medical advice. She repetitively told me over and over again, you can't leave, or if you leave, your baby's going to die. Why would you do that to your baby? You're going to kill your baby. I started hyperventilating. I felt like I was like in prison or like held back because this doctor's literally standing at the door. I'm explaining to her that I went through this with my first. I'm not uneducated in this. I would obviously come back if I thought things were getting worse. You guys have showed me all the evidence that this isn't getting worse. Now you're telling me that it is. It doesn't make sense.
Well, first of all, how is this her place to provide her opinion on you leaving or not?
Well, I think that she has to explain the risks of me leaving.
Yeah, but what you were mentioning is they provided the evidence, like you're not risking your child's life at this point. Nothing is happening in that aspect. And then she's providing a different opinion, like forcibly confining you, first of all, standing in the doorway as you're laying in the bed. Of course you feel you cannot leave in that moment, giving her personal opinion that you are going to kill your baby. And it sounds like it's a statement, not more of, hey, if you leave, these are the consequences that could potentially happen.
The attending doctor came up to talk to me and she was actually mind boggled that it all happened. She apologized profusely and the doctor told me that I could put in a formal complaint. So I did. I wrote up like a 10-page document. I'm not even joking. And in my first, I seen residents a lot. I never had issues with them. They used to actually come and sit in my room and talk to me. They had a meeting put in place. I ended up not going because this is when I was like 36 weeks pregnant and I missed it because of other issues that arose that maybe I'll get into one day. I don't know. But it made me wish that I did go because I think that doctors need to be liable and they need to take responsibility for what they've done because I'm pretty sure she probably just had a really bad day. And that's not really an excuse to treat someone like that.
Yeah, well, because she's a medical professional, you're taking it in medical terms. You're taking it, this is actually going to be happening, when you know it wasn't actually the case.
And that's the thing. I knew in my head it wasn't, but then of course I start doubting myself. By hour 36, I did end up peeing. But in the moment, those like first few hours, I'm starting to think, okay, well, maybe what if my bladder does explode?
That's terrible.
Yeah. But then when I went to my OB, I said, I don't want any residents on my care. And I even said this in the document, if I could only have my OB or only have the attendings, I would be perfectly fine. I understand all doctors need to learn. I just don't want them learning on me. They knew how anxious I was because I actually asked to be seen in the anxiety clinic. I got the referral for it, but I didn't actually end up going through with it. They knew that I only wanted attendings to be seeing me. I didn't even want the residents in the room. So the plan was that I got induced at 37 weeks. The issues that came about at 36 weeks pushed that. So instead of having the induction date at 37 weeks, I ended up having a normal appointment with my OB. At 37 and 1, I started going into labor on my own. and I went back into my OB's office after going to labor and delivery a few times. So I was just nervous, I guess, the whole time. And they were like, no, this is Braxton Hicks. I was like, no, I'm in labor. Like, I'm progressing. I'm 3 centimeters dilated. And then when I went back, I was 4 centimeters. They were saying, this is not labor. This is just the early stages. And it wasn't until my OB advocated for me that she's not going home. You guys are admitting her. Give her Pitocin. That's what she wants. So they admit me at around 11:30. They start Pitocin, I think, around 2. And then they wanted to pop my water. And I said, just do it. They were like, no, we want you to get the epidural first. And they were saying, no, it might be really painful. So the resident there was from my first pregnancy. So she said to me, I don't want to keep doing checks. They don't really do anything. They're putting you at risk for infection. There's not really a point to continuously do it. They told me at 7 p.m. that the shift was going to change. So a new nurse was coming in, a new doctor. I knew the doctor because I've had her multiple times in my pregnancy with both of my kids. She told me she knew that I didn't want residents on my care. She confirmed with me, well, this is a teaching hospital. I said, oh, well, take this up with my OB because I'm not having it. I think they came in around 9 o'clock to check to see if I was progressing. And they were like, oh, you're 8 centimeters. And by 9:15, I was ready to push. And in that moment, I was like whispering to my partner, like, wake up, I'm gonna get birth. And he's not listening because he's asleep. And the nurse like walks over nonchalantly, like, no, no, we just checked her. She's fine, sit down. And I was crowning at that point. So I had a really, really quick labor with her. I didn't push that long and a resident delivered my baby. It didn't really feel normal because my baby didn't cry when she was born.
So what happened?
I didn't want them to cut the cord until it went white. Did you cut the cord?
For my first, it was done right away. Like as soon as she was born, we didn't know the benefits. We weren't told about benefits. We weren't even provided an option. And then with my second, I knew about the benefits from my doula, from my midwife, and they waited, I think it was about 2 minutes. I'm not entirely sure, but it wasn't until the cord turned white. It was just the recommended amount of time we left it for.
They were like, absolutely not. We're not waiting until the cord's white. We need to cut it sooner than later. We do it at 1 minute. Then she starts like questioning me. So what do you know about it? Why do you want this? Who told you to do it? I just felt really vulnerable. They waited 1 minute in like 1 or 2 seconds. But when the baby was placed on my chest, she wasn't crying. I think she was just really shocked, they said. Labor was so quick. Took her off my chest within like 2 minutes and they suctioned her. And she was okay then. She started crying, but she was a very quiet baby.
And compared to your son, was he a loud baby coming out?
He cried so much and that's how we knew he had low blood sugar. And with my second, I was nervous about all these things, but I didn't have the antibiotics the second time around. I didn't have the narcotics. She didn't have low blood sugar and they were both born 37 and 1.
Yeah, that's interesting. They were born around the exact same time because for my first was born at 37 weeks, 2 days because of the steroids. And then my second was at 40 weeks and I was induced. I've never heard of a baby being born at 37 and 1 both times.
Yes. And my daughter was 6 pounds, 5 ounces and my son was 6'7". So they were very similar in weight too.
Wow.
But my daughter didn't really have complications from that birth in a sense like my son did. But I started passing very large blood clots from the moment I had her. And the doctor came back saying, you had a really great delivery. Nothing went wrong. You're just released once your baby's ready to go. And I had all these issues from that little situation that happened a couple weeks before I gave birth that I was like, I am not staying in this hospital. If I can leave against medical advice at like 3 hours, I'm doing it. So when I go back upstairs, I'm starting to pass even more blood clots. The resident comes upstairs that delivered my baby and she goes, I can put my hand in your uterus through your vaginal canal, but it's gonna hurt a lot and you can't get pain medicine. And I said, well, what is gonna happen if you don't do that? She goes, well, we don't really think you have anything wrong, so there's really no point for us to do it. And she advised that I didn't do it. So I said, okay, fine, I'm not gonna do it.
Also too, you were mentioning before, you don't want people continuously checking you because of the bacteria and that sort of thing. And you just gave birth. Of course this is gonna be a fear of yours, putting hands back up to contaminate you.
I was very persistent on how my care was gonna look. And I thought I had everything in control, but I had everything put in place. Like nobody's coming to see the baby, no one's coming to see me. And when I texted people about the baby being born, I said, I'll let you know when we're ready for visitors. Once we get home the next day, I started feeling like not well. And my daughter was born on the 21st of December. So I think we got home the 22nd in the middle of the night. So the 23rd, I woke up, I was like, this doesn't feel good. I don't know why I don't feel good, but it wasn't necessarily like baby blues like I had with my son. Physically, I was like, I don't feel good. And by the 24th, I started passing tissue that was probably the size of like a loonie or bigger. By the 23rd night, I started feeling sick and I didn't know why. I was like, this is strange. This is not right. But everyone just kind of said, oh, maybe you have depression or maybe you're just stressed out because you have a toddler at home. And then by the 24th, I started fainting and it felt almost like somebody put me upside down and shook me. And then come Christmas morning, I have no memory of what was going on. I was mumbling. I couldn't speak properly. People were getting annoyed with me. They didn't understand that something was actually wrong. And everyone just kind of put it off as you have postpartum depression. Oh, she doesn't want anyone coming over because she has postpartum depression. She needs to accept help from people. People were just really persistent on you have postpartum depression. By the 26th, I would say, I was like, okay, no, something's actually wrong. I couldn't stand up at this point. I fainted multiple times a day. I wasn't able to eat. I wasn't able to hold my baby. I wasn't able to walk. And again, everyone in my life is saying you have postpartum depression. I think only like two or three people in my life at the time thought, okay, maybe something is wrong. So I call my OB 5 days postpartum and I say, there's something wrong. I don't feel good. She says, well, just wait it out. Asked about my bleeding. I said, I'm only bleeding through a pad every 3 or 4 hours. She says, that's normal bleeding. I said, I'm passing clots. She says, that's normal for a second. By the 30th or the 31st, I said, okay, no, something is wrong. So I go to the labor and delivery. I sit there for maybe 4 hours and they say, well, your blood test looks good. You look good. I think it's just because you have a toddler at home. You're tired. It's a big transition. Go home, rest, see how your bleeding goes for 3 days. Don't come back until it's been 3 days and you still feel this way.
So did they do any testing at labor and delivery? Did they give you blood work, anything like that?
All they did was test my CBC. Like they wanted to see if my hemoglobin was low, which it wasn't. I was getting iron transfusions my whole pregnancy. And they were saying that my bleeding is normal.
And what about the tissue?
They said, again, it's normal. So 3 days go by. At this point, I have like no color in me. I have no idea what's going on. I'm like hallucinating. I'm upset. I'm crying all the time. I can't speak properly. I knew that I needed to bring my daughter to get her lip tie and tongue tie assessed. I needed to do all these things for my daughter. She had torticollis. She had lip tie and tongue tie, which was obviously affecting her eating, but I couldn't do it.
And were you still breastfeeding during all of this?
Yes. And I think that's why they probably didn't see the signs of the retained placenta. It affects your milk. But mind you, I stopped breastfeeding during pregnancy. So my milk came in very quickly. So when I go back the second time, I'm not even speaking properly. I'm like, I don't feel good. That's all I'm saying to the doctor because I don't know what else to say. And the doctor is like, well, I think we need to do an ultrasound. Like, please don't leave. It's going to be a little while because we're really busy, but please don't leave. So I go for the ultrasound. I have to wait even more. So 2 or 3 hours go by. I'm anxious because my son's with somebody else. I was like, I need to go home. Like, if something's wrong, you're going to call me. But if I stay here any longer, I'm going to die. And I'd rather be at home and die. So the resident comes back in and goes, I have your report. I can't tell you anything because I can't read it. But please don't leave. Like, you need to be assessed. Please do not leave. And she comes back in like an hour or two later and goes, you have retained placenta. And it's big. And I said, well, how big? What does that mean? I have no idea what this is. I didn't understand it. I said, well, you took my placenta out. And she says it's 5.6 centimeters, which is very large.
5.6 centimeters. How did they miss that? Because to me, that's a big chunk of your placenta.
So they tell me I have two options. You can either take this pill and it will expel it, or you can have surgery. And I said, well.
And wait a minute, what about all the tissue you had been passing? So was that placenta as well? So there was more placenta left inside previously?
Yes. This is what is shocking to me because they gave me the option of surgery and taking this pill. The doctor says, well, that's a big piece. I don't think you should take the pill, but you can. And you have to wait for the surgery. And I said, what the fuck do you mean I have to wait? And she goes, well, it's not like an urgent thing that you need right this minute. And I said, well, what's considered urgent? Because I've been bleeding through a pad right now every 2 hours. And on top of that, I'm sitting on the toilet and blood is pouring out of me. What is urgent to you? She says, okay, well, you know what? Let me go talk to the attending doctor. I was crying at this point. I was like, you're going to let me die? Like, you guys did this to me and then you're going to let me die? She got the doctor to put me on the schedule for the next day. They said, you need to go home, rest, and then go for a pre-op appointment in the morning and then we'll call you when we're ready. Once I go home, I start bleeding through a pad every hour. I couldn't even walk at this point.
Did they offer you a bed at the hospital or they just sent you home?
No. No, Even. And when I called the OB saying that I've been bleeding through a pad every hour, he says, well, you have to go for a pre-op appointment anyways. There's no point in coming here because we're not going to do the surgery. I started calling other hospitals and nobody would take me.
So of course you're going to think you're going to die. I would have thought I was going to die. I'm surprised your family, your friends weren't worried that you're just going to die in the middle of the night at this point.
They, I think, still again thought I had postpartum depression. Like, to this day, a lot of people still think I had it. And it's an argument that I refuse to do anymore.
But wait a minute. Your partner was with you when you were diagnosed with this retained placenta. So when you told people you had retained placenta, like, did they not believe you? What was kind of happening?
Well, I don't think a lot of people know what it is. When I said I'm having postpartum hemorrhage, everyone just thinks, oh, you're having postpartum depression, right? When somebody says anything postpartum, they refer to it as postpartum depression.
Right. And I think that they're not educated on maternal mental health or postpartum complications or anything related to babies, birth, women's bodies.
Yes. So then when I went to the pre-op clinic, the nurse was like shocked. She looked at me and was like, you do not look good. How much have you been bleeding? And I said, I've bled through a pad every hour. I've now bled through over 40 pads in 20 hours and something is wrong. Like, I don't think I'm going to even make it to the hospital. She calls the OR and goes, you better get ready for this girl because you guys should have done this a long time ago. And you need to retest her blood because she probably doesn't have enough blood to get through a surgery. Once I go down, immediately bring me in. First, I was going to go home and they'd call me when to come, but the nurse there was like, this is not okay. They meet me in the OR. My partner's with my baby. They give me blood, I think, through the surgery just as a precaution. So I get into recovery after and I start bleeding bad. And my partner's coming with my baby because she's breastfed. And I'm like, blood is pooling out of me, like waterfall coming out of me. And the nurse is like, okay, we need to call the doctor. And the doctor starts running down the hallway. And I'm confused because I'm like, you guys told me this was a day surgery. I told you I'm not staying here. They're putting things in my cheeks or giving me needles in my bum, putting stuff in IV. Like, it didn't stop, I feel like, for like 2 hours. To control the bleeding.
What were they putting in your cheek?
I don't know. They were putting something on the inside to make your blood clot. And then once they controlled the bleeding, the doctor goes, okay, we're gonna get you to stand up and see if you can pee. And when I stand up, I go to sit down on this like wheelchair thing they bring. I pass this blood clot bigger than my baby. I literally thought it was my uterus falling out of me.
My God.
I wish I had a photo of it because I was terrified. I was like, that's my uterus.
What was it?
It was just blood clots. My body was trying to clot so bad that all that blood that was pouring out of me formed into a big, huge blood clot. And mind you, there was like two or three of them that came out.
That's so graphic.
Yeah. So then I go to lay back down. And I remember thinking, like, I'm like going in and out of consciousness at this point. Like, I'm confused. And she's like, okay, well, the doctor's coming. They want to just check you. And I think you might need to go back to the OR. The doctor comes and goes, well, we're going to do that uterus check. And this is the same resident that came with my son, with my daughter. The girl who birthed my daughter and left placenta in came back again. And she goes, I know I'm the one who left the placenta inside, but we're going to do a check to make sure we got everything. Because mind you, they did a blind DNC.
A blind? Go back. What do you mean blind?
So they didn't do it ultrasound guided. They should have done it ultrasound guided because I just had a baby. This is a procedure done on your uterus. Think that if they didn't do it blind, I would have not hemorrhaged a second time.
Yeah, because how would they even know if you got all of it if they're doing it blindly? Well, I guess this is the 5 point whatever centimeters.
I think because it was such a big piece, they thought there's no way there's more. And she puts her hand in my vaginal canal into my uterus. We're going to have a code word because you're going to want to yell stop, but you're not actually going to want me to stop. And I was like, okay. And like, they had nurses come and hold my arms and stuff down.
Because you're incoherent. You've lost so much blood. Your body is in shock. They hook you up and give you more blood at this point.
So they gave me blood in the surgery, but they didn't do it afterwards. So instead they were giving me blood products, like I think platelets and stuff.
Okay.
They said, we don't think we left anything inside, so we're not going to bring you back to the OR and we're gonna see how your bleeding goes throughout the night. So I hemorrhaged again throughout the night. The morning comes, the new doctor comes on and goes, we're gonna give you an ultrasound. My partner had to go home to get my toddler because nobody would stay with him. People have their own lives going on. And I was scared because I was like, with this newborn baby, couldn't get up to get the baby out of the bassinet. So anytime she cried, I had to call them or I had to hold her the whole time, which again, I thought I was just gonna drop her. And I was terrified. I wanted people to come stay with me in the hospital. Nobody would because again, they thought I had postpartum depression. They thought I was being overreactive. Now I was being rude to them, or I was just acting in a way that wasn't okay. But I literally thought I was dying.
Not only are you dismissed now by the medical professionals, but the people in your life that you have these relationships with are dismissing you. I can't imagine. Like, how did that impact your relationship with them?
It honestly changed so much. Like, I started realizing that even if you tell somebody you're dying, like, they don't care. Not necessarily they don't care. They just, people don't really believe what's happening until it happens, I guess, because nobody was there. There's very few people. Like, I thought I had a great village, but I didn't. It doesn't affect me in a sense of like, oh, you're a bad person now, but it just makes me see things for what it is.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I had to get a second surgery and they're making me sign documentation. The first thing is they say, we're just going to take your uterus out. This is going to make sure that nothing happens, because if we keep scraping, it's going to be the highest risk for perforation, and then you're going to have to get a full-blown abdomen surgery. They seen just over 11 centimeters on the second ultrasound.
Wow. So the first one was 5.6 and the second one was that large? Like,
that's what's confusing to me.
How did they not see this in the first instance? I'm confused.
I have no idea. And right after my first surgery, I started getting a uterine infection. So the infection is now growing in my uterus.
That's so devastating and traumatic.
Yeah, and still to this day, people don't see that this is like a life-altering thing.
And then, so how did they get the rest of the placenta out?
So they did another surgery, but this one was really long because they had to do it so gently. They couldn't just scrape my uterus. I was like, I just don't want that taken away from me. And also, there's complications when you do take out your reproductive organs. And they said, we're going to try to keep your uterus, but it's most likely you're not going to have it. And there is a chance of death. And she said to me, because I've already hemorrhaged 3 times now at this point, she just wanted to make sure that it was clear that that's a possibility. And she said, I'm not doing this to scare you, but this is a real thing. And in that moment, I literally thought, I'm going to fucking die. And my baby's just going to be left with like some random nurse that I just met. Because my partner was with my toddler at the time, they came and said they're going to bring me for emergency surgery. The nurse was like, well, I've never seen them just like come and take somebody within a couple hours. Like, usually when they say emergency surgery, it means in the next 8 hours. So I was like, oh, we have time. They come not even 20 minutes later. So I leave my baby with the nurse, and then my partner came really quickly. When I go down into the operating room, the doctor comes and goes, we're gonna just do one more test to make sure your blood's enough, whatever. And they just keep talking to me about getting another blood transfusion, getting more blood. And I just remember saying out loud, please don't kill me, because I have 2 kids. Please don't let me die. I have 2 kids, and like, you guys did this to me. And I was praying out loud, please God, I can't die. And I just remember the nurse like rubbing my hand, praying with me and saying like, it's okay. Like, we have you. Like, well, we're gonna try. Their faces weren't even shocked that I was saying that. But in that moment, I actually thought I would never wake up again. I remember saying like bye to my partner, like I was actually gonna die, and like to my baby, like if like, you know, you're gonna have a good life. In that moment, I truly thought I was gonna die.
That's such a scary emotion that I don't think a lot of people have been through.
No, and I've never been through that in my life. I've had like experiences where I thought maybe I almost died, but no, I would have died if I didn't go when I went and pushed. And that's why like my faith is so strong now, because I mean, like, other things in my life have happened where you start questioning, oh, is God real, whatever. But I had something come over me the one day when I went to the hospital, and everyone in my life told me, stop going to the hospital, they're not going to do anything for you, what's it going to do? And it was like something in me being like, you need to push, and you need to push right now. Like, I just think that if I didn't go then, I probably would have died.
And you had to fight for your life. If you never fought, you wouldn't be here today.
Yeah, and it's sad though that so many women, they just think that it's okay, that if the doctor confirms it's okay, or people are telling me I'm overreacting, and there's just this whole thing of postpartum depression, which postpartum depression is real. It's horrible, and I wish nobody had to go through that, but there's also other issues that you can have. There's more complications than just a mental health issue.
Yeah, there's a lot more physical to it as well that a lot of people don't know about, because it's not talked about. They make it seem like it's so rare, and it's really not.
No, it's not rare at all. And a lot of people, these things happen to them, but people just don't know about it. And it's sad too, because they didn't tell me in the moment. Like, they just kind of said, well, if you keep your uterus, it's fine. But then after the surgery, they come and tell you, well, you can't even try to have a baby for 2 years. You need to go through testing to make sure you can even carry a baby, because now your uterus might perforate. They just tell you all these different things where they never told me any of this before.
Yeah, exactly. And then was there scar tissue built up as well? Like, what did that look
like? Yeah, so I actually ended up getting a bad uterine infection. So I had to be on antibiotics for 3 weeks, which obviously I think affected my daughter. She's colic as can be. Even I'd say now it's better that she's like a year, but basically changed a lot for me having scar tissue. Like, I think too, trauma built up. Like, I still have lots of work to do on the trauma end of things, but I seen a pelvic floor therapist. She was shocked because there's like no movement, and even going for exams and stuff, I push all of that off.
So you'd rather not know than know the damage, it sounds like.
Yes, which isn't great, don't get me wrong, but I think that's like a part of the process of recovery.
Yeah, I feel like that's your coping mechanism for now, and perhaps in the future it's gonna look different.
Yeah, but I mean, I did take a lot of steps though. Like, I did go to a pelvic floor therapist, I went to my OB saying these things, and he prescribed me a medication, and there's different things that you can do, but it's not just something that's gonna fix itself right away. And also the aftermath, like, I was so unwell for so long, and it's not a norm.
So after you went through all this trauma, did you experience any postpartum depression? Did you experience postpartum anxiety? Did you get PTSD?
I definitely think I have PTSD from it, but I don't know necessarily. Like, I did go to doctors and stuff. They didn't say I had issues. They all just said I wasn't showing signs of it. And I just think that having to go to all these appointments and having all these complications just sent me into a state of fight or flight.
Yeah, that's such an intense story. I'm so sorry that you've been through that. That's so traumatic. I cannot imagine. And it's amazing to see how strong-willed and you were able to advocate for yourself, which I feel like a lot of people, they're missing that piece and they're not able to. And it's so sad to see that if you didn't do those things, the result would have probably been your death. And it's so scary to think that this happens to other women, not just yourself, and people don't talk about it.
That's the thing. People don't talk about it. It happens a lot and people don't talk about it. And when you're not looking for the signs, you don't know, right? I never even knew postpartum hemorrhage was like a thing that people get if it's not right after birth. I didn't know retained placenta was a thing. I didn't know any of these complications prior to having my daughter.
And now, knowing what you know now, what do you feel like that changes?
I think that it's just important that you have a good support system, even if it is one or two people. That changes than having absolutely nobody. And I've also realized that when people aren't there to help you, or they don't want to help you or help you recover per se, then that's okay. Just don't go to them. Just go to where you need to be and use the people that are going to advocate for you. And just after you have a baby, you need that extra support, and it is okay to get it. And I think that when you know something's wrong and you feel like something's wrong, it's better to be safe than sorry.
Exactly. And I think that's a very valid point. And I think a takeaway from your story is, if you have the feeling that something is not right, you need to get it looked at. You Yes. need to advocate for yourself. And if you can't advocate for yourself, possibly have someone attend the doctor with you who's able to do that. And it sounds like your OB was able to advocate for you on different parts of your story that you shared, which is great. And some people don't have that. But even just having a different support person that can, I think would make all the difference.
Yeah. And I think too that it's just important that you don't let people take that away. And I mean, it's hard to say because I've done that multiple times, but if you know something's wrong, something's probably wrong.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. I think a lot of people are going to be very interested in hearing everything that you shared today, and we're so happy you're here to share this story with us.
Yes. Well, thank you for listening, everybody.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to my mommies, and I really love you so much. Yeah, I love you. Yeah,